tuning in to Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. I'm Lavonia Mallory.
And I'm Eric Newton. We've got a great program planned for you this hour.
First, we have breaking news, a breaking news story from correspondent Jonah Megberg, who was on the scene of a sit-in at Senator Chuck Schumer's office on Friday.
Then we'll be joined by two great guests, Noah Corey, the Helderberg blacksmith, to discuss his custom hand-forged steel items, the history of blacksmithing, and our other guest, Paul Crosby, is the owner of Crosby Handmade Knives. He's also a member of the Capital District Blacksmith Association. They're here to talk about local enthusiasts keeping the craft alive in the Capital District.
And now for some rapid fire local headlines. With all six members of the Cohoes Common Council still being in the disagreement over the council 2018 leadership role, six ward councilman Randy Norwich has proposed a lottery to pull an end to the stalemate. The council must elect a president and vice president every year. However, with the vote being tied, the city's corporation council, Brian Creamer, says that leadership role would remain the same until a majority vote can decide between the six councilmen. For the past 2 years, third ward councilman Christopher Briggs has served as council president.
The Troy Record reports that the New York Civil Liberties Union has sent a letter to the leaders of the Rensselaer County Legislature calling for public discussion of the County Sheriff Office ICE application. Last week, Rensselaer County Sheriff Pat Russo met with members of the legislature in private meetings. The application would allow the county jail to enforce federal immigration law at a local level. Russo claims that joining the program will allow the jail to house ICE prisoners, providing additional revenue to the county at a current rate of $97 per day per inmate. Opponents, however, have argued that there are additional costs to participating in the program and that the county could just arrange to house prisoners without entering into the enforcement agreement, as Albany decided to do after concerns were raised. The chairman of the county legislature, Republican Mike Stammel, has said that the sheriff is an elected official, should be able to do what he believes is best for the county.
The Albany Council Legislature Democratic Caucus unanimously voted on Thursday evening to elect 25-year veteran and Albany County Legislator Gary Domalevich.
New York State announced two new grant programs for $5.5 million to help preserve farmland and protect it from development and conversion into non-agricultural uses. More than $62 million in state funding has been invested in 82 farmland conservation projects since 2011. Another $20 million will be available later this year.
School officials are not happy with Governor Cuomo's proposed 3% hike in education funding. The Board of Regents said the funding would need to be increased twice as much by $1.5 billion just to maintain present levels of service. Advocates point out that even more is needed to comply with the court orders to provide more equal funding for inner city and rural school districts.
The governor on Wednesday released more details on his idea to replace the state income tax with a payroll tax, which he claims would help New York respond to recent federal tax changes curtailing the deductibility of state and local taxes. Cuomo also wants to allow homeowners to pay school taxes in the form of a charitable donation, which could then qualify the payers for an income tax credit. His proposal has raised questions from all parts of the political spectrum, and some financial advisors have questioned whether it is legal. Critics note that the governor's proposal would mainly help the wealthiest taxpayers. The governor claims that without the changes to New York's tax code, the federal law's limitations on the deductibility of state and local taxes will cost New York's taxpayers an additional $14.3 billion per year.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. On Friday the 19th, activists from the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement and ICE Free Capital District staged a sit-in Senator Chuck Schumer's office. They were attempting to defend the DREAM Act. Here in the studio, we have Rich Ring, a Troy local and leading organizer with Ice Free Capital District. Hello, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So tell us about the sit-in.
Yeah, well, a group of us representing a few different organizations, that's Ice Free Capital District, Troy New Sanctuary, and the local chapter of Democratic Socialists of America, as well as Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. All of us came together, and at this moment, as the federal government is deciding on a budget and threatening a government shutdown, we were trying to make sure that Senator Schumer fulfills his promise, as he failed to do before the end of the year. He said at the end of the year there would be a DREAM Act, that is protecting protecting people who arrived to this country at a very young age and have been here in school here, part of our communities for a long time, and are currently under threat of deportation because of President Trump's recent actions. So we wanted to make sure that Senator Schumer made good on his promise and passed, before improving the budget, passed a clean DREAM Act, by which I mean not just a DREAM Act that provides for these children with DACA, but one that also doesn't provide additional funding to ICE or to build a bigger border wall or otherwise threaten and really terrorize immigrant communities.
So for our listeners, what exactly is the DREAM Act?
Well, the DREAM Act has been proposed for quite some time, and basically it would provide a path to citizenship for children who arrived here as undocumented immigrants at an early age. Currently, or at least under Obama, those children were given protection under something called DACA, which is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So those DREAMers are the ones who arrived here in their childhood. But that was never a permanent solution. A DREAM Act would be something passed by Congress to make a permanent solution and a way for those, for dignity, respect, and permanent protection for those people.
So why is this act so important? I mean, what's so important about the DREAM Act?
Well, in the issue more broadly, I would say that what's happening right now in this country and what has been escalating is that people are being disappeared. People who don't have the right paperwork are being disappeared. And by people, I mean students, parents, coworkers, bosses. Our neighbors are being disappeared and taken away by ICE. They're being taken away when they show up to family court. They're being taken away when they drop off their children at school. They're being taken away from their workplaces or having their doors knocked down in the middle of the night. And that's not something that a decent country can stand for. And that's why there's been increasing levels of resistance. And that's what we were trying to contribute to today.
I see. So if Schumer were to introduce what you call the clean DREAM Act, do you think that it would garner any support in Congress from Republicans, or would it really hit a brick wall due to their majority?
This really isn't a partisan issue. Certainly, President Trump made it a partisan issue to some extent during his election. He ran as part of his white supremacist platform against immigrants, I would say. But there has been a lot of Republican support for DREAM Act. Depending on what day you ask, even President Trump has expressed support for DREAM Act. And during the Obama administration, the Democrats controlled all portions of government and failed to pass a DREAM Act. So really, we're not interested in the partisan politics of the issue. We're interested in protection for our neighbors, and we don't want to wait any longer.
And is there a lot of support for your movement? Are there a lot of people behind you?
Yeah, I think certainly on the issue of the DREAMers, of children who arrived here, there's been in polls have shown very broad support for that idea for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, not only among Democrats, it's been bipartisan. It just simply makes sense that someone who grew up here, speaks English as their primary language, et cetera, they're part of our community. They should have protection. So there is a large base of support. But we just want to make sure that, that the government gets this done and gets this done now.
What was Schumer's response when you were sitting in at his office?
Well, unfortunately, we didn't. We requested to meet with Senator Schumer. Uh-huh. We did not get a chance to. We met first with a junior staffer, and we're told there was no one else there. And we were led to a conference room and told by the manager of the building that was his conference room and that we had to leave. There seemed to be a lot of confusion about there about who the building and the government belongs to, that it's ours and not theirs. But maybe that's an issue for another day. But we didn't get to talk to Senator Schumer. We did make ourselves clear, and we read a statement to one of his staffers, and we certainly hope he gets the message.
I mean, this is some serious business, you know, walking into the senator's office and sitting down and having to sit in. I mean, that's like a throwback to the 60s, you know what I'm saying, with people really like taking power away from people with power and saying, listen, we have the power, too. I mean, that's pretty... It's pretty gutsy on your part.
Well, by no means are we alone. This is happening all over the country. Many, many people have been arrested in Washington, D.C. this week. I think a group of 100 clergy or maybe 100 rabbis in particular were arrested over this issue over the course of last week. Activism, as you say, old-style activism in this regard, which is what it's going to take, is really growing on this issue, and we just wanted to be one small part of it. And, you know, we didn't get to meet with Mr. Schumer in this instance, and we eventually left. But as we left, we told him we'd be back, and we will.
What's his position on this issue?
He has expressed his support for DREAM Act. But he promised that there would be one by Christmas, and here we are, and didn't happen. He has expressed his support in the past, but as I said, Democrats have been expressing their support prior to the Trump administration and simply not gotten this done. So we hope he will get the message that this is urgent, and if it takes a government shutdown to get a DREAM Act, to get a clean DREAM Act, not one accompanied by more immigration law enforcement, that's what we want.
So... why is this movement so important to you? Why you? Why are you involved?
It's really a basic question of justice. And I guess I've traveled a bit and met and lived with and gotten to know a lot of people from the countries that President Trump disparages and insults and says racist things about all the time. And I don't want to hear it. And, you know, we're all here together. We're trying to build a community. And to make any kind of change, we're going to need all of us in this country united and not divided the way they're trying to do.
One topic that we had mentioned earlier was that Rensselaer County is considering opting in to the enforcement of these ICE standards. Do you have any demonstrations or actions planned in regard to that proposal?
We don't have any demonstrations planned at the moment, and it's not clear yet. We have been attending Rensselaer County legislature meetings and bringing up this question. It's not at all clear that this will even be voted on. This may be something that the sheriff will decide to spend an enormous amount of Rensselaer County taxpayer money training officers to do the federal government's job, and then presumably spend more money having new officers do what those officers used to do. So it's going to cost a lot of money. So we've been to the Rensselaer County's legislature. The sheriff met in a closed session to try and explain this bad idea to the legislature. We haven't found out what went on in that session since it was closed. But we are certainly pushing, and I was interested to hear about the letter, that we want the sheriff to explain in an open session to the taxpayers of this country, of this county. We want him to explain this idea and be able to respond about the various ways in which it's a terrible idea.
So what's next for you, and how can our listeners get involved with what you're doing?
I can't say what's next exactly, expect some hot tea. But following that, I do encourage people to come to the Facebook page for Ice Free Capital District.
Okay.
I believe that the Gmail address is troysanctuarycampaign@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't get that, contact us via Facebook on Ice Free CD. And there's a lot going on locally. We also want to see Troy become a sanctuary city to protect our citizens here. And that is actually very high on our agenda in the months to come.
Well, listen, we thank you for all the hard work you're doing in the community. We wish you the best. Keep up the good work. And thank you for joining us here on WOOC 105.3 FM. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I love WOOC.
All right. So, I mean, it's really amazing all of the movements that are happening in the Capital District. You know, Albany is the capital of New York State, and we have some very strong people in this city who are really trying to make a difference and be a part of change. And so, I don't know about you, Eric, but I'm sort of amazed that, this ICE movement is happening when he talks about people disappearing from their home. So, you know, it's amazing.
It's incredible, really, the amount of leeway that the authorities have on that matter.
Yeah, so we wish them the best. And now we're going to move on to another segment, Reclaiming History. This is an ongoing series for me, and I'm thrilled to have two very special guests in the studio with us today. We have Noah Corey. He is the Heldenberg blacksmith. And we have Paul Crosby. He is the owner of Crosby Handmade Knives. They are both blacksmiths. I mean, talk about old school. So listen, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell them where you do your work, where you're located, and a little bit about yourself. Why don't we start with Noah?
Yeah, hello. I'm Noah. I'm the Heldenberg blacksmith. I've been a professional blacksmith for the past 5 years, and I work out of my shop in Altamont, New York, and do a lot of custom work, railings, gates, fences, furniture, and whatever the customer wants, really.
All right, and our next guest.
Hi, I'm Paul of Crosby Handmade Knives. I do mostly Damascus knives and some novelty items, bottle openers and things, but I also do a lot of work with the Capital District Blacksmith Association, and I've only been doing it for about 5 or 6 years, but I enjoy it a lot, and for me it's just a hobby right now, but it hopefully will turn to something bigger in the future.
So I know I asked the blacksmiths to bring some toys into the studio today because, you know, it's like show and tell, like when you were a kid. And I know Noah brought at least one thing with him. It's a hammer and an anvil, right?
Yeah, here we go. I hope I didn't blow out the microphone there.
All right, wake up, everyone. Wake up. So that's an anvil, which is what is an anvil? Tell our listeners what that is exactly.
Well, it's our work surface, so it's what we do all of our forging on. It's either a cast iron or wrought iron body with a hard tool steel face, which is hard enough to take a beating while we're forging out our work, forming our steel.
Yeah. So I know some of our listeners may watch television, and I was talking to you when we were preparing for the show about someone in Cohoes burnt down, I don't know, 20 buildings or more, trying to forge.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to forge a sword. They were watching a show that comes on television, and I wanted to talk to you about, like, where can you do something like that safely, you know, because you don't want to burn down the neighborhood.
Well, the best thing, you know, is to learn, you know, what space you can use. You can certainly, I highly recommend finding a group of people, you know, especially if you're starting out, because you're using very high temperatures. You're using, materials that could potentially hurt you if you're not careful. You certainly want to have a safe area. My understanding was the gentleman from Cahos was using a burning barrel, which is not a, you know, not a, a good source of heat for anything other than maybe keeping your hands warm, but certainly not for forging. I mean, the materials, you know, you do a little research, a little reading. You know, we have our local group in Albany, the Capital District Blacksmith Association. We kind of cater to new people who want to try it out, who want to do it for the first time or learn a little bit more. Obviously, the internet, YouTube, there's tons of videos. I mean, not all of them are the best in the world, but you kind of get a feel for what you're going to be looking into when you watch some of these. But we have our meetings this last Sunday of every month at the Norman Skill Farm in Albany. They're free, noon to four every month, and we always have a demonstration. We always have tons of people that are like-minded and can help somebody out who's just starting.
And you have a forge.
Yes.
And so it's a safe forge.
Absolutely.
Built for melting metal.
Not necessarily melting, but yeah, certainly
heating it up.
You're doing it wrong.
Yeah, if it melts, you've done something horribly wrong. Yes.
Yeah, I've worked at the forge in down in the Norman Skill where the Capital District Blacksmiths meet, and it's actually the City Masons of Albany rebuilt the forge, so it's it was professionally built, and it's works just beautifully. So it's a really safe place to work. You're there with a lot of people who have a lot of experience, and you really do have to seek out professionals before you go ahead and try and take it on yourself and do it in your backyard, because the damage doesn't stop with you if you make a mistake.
Absolutely.
There are also a lot of good places where you can pay to take a class.
Mm-hmm.
I know personally, I teach kids in the summertime, usually middle school age kids, at the Heldeberg Workshop in Voorheesville, New York. And it's a nonprofit day camp folk school. So we can teach kids how to do it safely. Adults can certainly learn to do it safely too.
Absolutely.
So Noah, tell us a little bit about your individual craft. Like, what exactly do you make and how do you make it?
I make a variety of items. For example, in my shop right now, I'm working on a hand-forged gate. It's about 7 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it's all traditional joinery. So it's collars, rivets, mortise and tenon joints, and this is all hand-forged. So what that means is I actually have a coal-fueled forge, not very different from what people have been using for hundreds or even thousands of years. That fuel, the coal, which I refine into coke as I burn a fire, will burn in excess of 3,000 degrees. And that's hot enough to bring my steel that I use to up to working temperature, up to around 2,000 degrees. It's red hot. I can take it out and forge it on my anvil with my hammer. So I actually am manipulating the material on a molecular level to create all of the components I use and assemble them using various means to my finished product.
So when I was doing a little research preparing for you guys to come in today, I was trying to find out how far back blacksmithing goes, and I found some information that it goes as far back as the 1400s in the United States. There were some forges during the slave period where they actually had African-American slaves helping to forge metal, and that they would actually go and capture slaves in Africa who knew blacksmithing and bring them here to the United States to continue to build the forging industry here in America. So it's amazing stuff. Tell me what you know about the history of blacksmithing.
Well, the history as far as the, back, as far back as, the 1800s, as far back, even further than that, when you needed something, you needed a shovel to tend your garden, you would go to the blacksmith and he would forge you a shovel. You need a pot hanger to hang over your fire so you can cook food for your family. He would make that, or she. you know, the blacksmith was kind of the hardware store that you would go to, and you would have your items crafted. And every major town would have a blacksmith. They would all have, you know, even the horses and everything would need shoes. And they would typically, that's done by farriers, which is a whole nother thing. But they use similar tools, the same fire, the same anvil, everything else. So it's a very useful thing. The revolutionary, or the, excuse me, the Industrial Revolution kind of squashed the need for the blacksmith, because why would you pay for custom work when you can go to the factory where they would just stamp it out with a big machine and get the same result? So that kind of squashed the blacksmith, at least for the most part. But now it's becoming an art form. It's a craft. There's a resurgence of people who are doing this, and it's kind of bringing it into a light. And certainly, you know, television shows and things now that have that kind of make it even more interesting and bring it to a wider audience.
So, Paul, I noticed you brought in some of your Damascus metal.
Yes.
Now, tell us what is Damascus?
Damascus is kind of a general term. The modern term is pattern welded steel, but it's generally referred to as Damascus, where you take different types of steel, forge weld them together, you get them hot enough where they actually become one piece of metal, and then you fold it onto itself, and you kind of just keep repeating that. And it was originally done for carbon migration. So you'd have a stronger tool. You'd have a better sword. You'd have something that would cut through armor, or something that would be just better than the other guys. And now it's done primarily for the beauty and the patterns. And I know it's our audience can't see it, but you can see some of these. You can actually, if you touch the, you can actually feel the texture and the different
right.
metals.
It does change as you drag your finger across the piece of steel. You can feel the transition there.
And that you can do with different methods. You can fold it a certain way that will produce different patterns. You can drill dimples into it that'll give you a different effect. This piece here was twisted. That piece there was cut with a grinder to put slots in it to reveal different layers in different ways. It's beautiful.
Your knives, the knives you brought in, and the work that Noah brought in, the stuff is really, it is beautiful. It is a work of art. It's not just a knife. It's not just a bookend. It is a work of art.
And there are a lot of people, there are a lot of people out there that appreciate something that was made by hand, made by a human, you know, with a soul, you know, the focus for making it something special rather than going to a store and buying something shrink wrapped at Walmart. And, you know,
right.
I mean, they do have modern steels that are very good performing steels, but there's just something natural and beautiful about a handcrafted blade.
And I think that's what that's the blacksmith's niche in this day and age, because you can't replicate a hand-forged piece of steel in a factory. Absolutely not. So, you know, and I think there's a growing appreciation for handcrafted items of all kinds right now in the country, whether it's carpentry, you know, glass, jewelry, blacksmithing, and I think that's a really positive thing.
Yeah, and I know that you guys both take commissions for your work. And how does that process really even get started? I assume someone contacts you and they say, I'd like this built. But then do you have a steel guy that you call up?
Yeah.
There's a steel guy.
There is. Well, it's a big steel yard, actually, just up 787 where I go. And they have all sorts of bar stock, various, you know, lengths and sizes and thickness, so you can get just about everything you need for your project, depending on what you want to forge it into. For me, the commission process, most of my interest is generated online, so I get a lot of people through who just find me, you know, searching on Google or go through Facebook, and they come with me to with a custom project idea, or they get inspired by the pictures I post or something they've seen elsewhere. And, you know, hopefully we just have a good conversation, figure out what's you know, going to work for them. And, yeah, it's just a good dialogue with the customer and just as we move forward through the project.
Right. I mean, this sounds like a good time for you guys to plug your websites. What's the best way if someone wants one of these beautiful pieces of steel? How can they contact you?
Well, for me, I'm online at HeldebergBlacksmith.com and Facebook.com/TheHelderbergBlacksmith. And that's HELDERBERG. So the best way to reach me is just through the website and request a quote right on the front page.
And what about you, Paul?
I'm online at CrosbyKnives.com. I'm also on Facebook at Facebook/CrosbyKnives. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me. Also, the Capital District Blacksmith Association. If you want to see what the schedule is or find out when the meetings are, that would be cdblacksmiths.org. And there, we're also on Facebook as Capital District Blacksmith Association.
Now, I see a lot of the guys on television. You know, I do watch that show that the guy watched, to, you know, when he burned down his house or the neighborhood. and I always wonder, can women do this? Because, I mean, that's a pretty heavy anvil you brought in here. But the hammer, I liked the sound of it when it hit the finger. Like, can a woman do this? You need to be strong?
Absolutely.
I know the Capital District Blacksmiths Association has women members.
Yes, we do.
A regular attendance. And I've learned a thing or two from some incredible female blacksmiths. I went to school for blacksmithing in Tennessee, and there were plenty of students who were women. So it's not restricted to men. You know, I think that it appeals more to men who like to play with fire and hit stuff with a hammer.
Oh, yeah.
But there are plenty of ladies doing it, for sure.
And how long do you have to go to school to become a blacksmith?
Well, you don't have to go to school to become a blacksmith. I chose to go through a fine arts program. So it was a four-year degree, and I produced a thesis to graduate. So it ended up taking me longer than 4 years. But, you know, that's a path someone could choose to take. Other people will apprentice. Other people will, you know, get introduced to it through metal fabrication and welding, and end up taking a path that leads them to blacksmithing. So there's no single way to approach it.
Yeah, I'm completely self-taught. Everything that I know, I've learned either through reading or, like I said, internet videos, so forth. I've taken a few demonstration classes, not really a classroom setting or anything, but everything that I've learned how to do, I've learned by just practicing and failing. A lot of times you learn more from a failure than you do from a successful first time, because really if you do it right the first time, you really didn't learn anything, you just got lucky. And it's a fun way to learn from your mistakes and practice.
One of the thrills of this particular segment is reclaiming history, and so you guys are bringing something from the past forward. You're continuing an art form, you're continuing a craft.
Absolutely.
And you're passing it on to the next generation. And that's what this story is all about. And I appreciate both of you for your work in the community. Tell our listeners again, one more time, how they can reach both of you. Just give us a Facebook or a phone number.
Facebook is Crosby Knives on Facebook, or CrosbyKnives.com.
And Noah Corey is at HeldebergBlacksmith.com or 518-368-1885.
So I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to take a class with one of you. Could I sign up for like a class and take a class on, you know, beating metal? Because I'm kind of looking forward to this.
I would recommend checking out the Capital District Blacksmiths.
Sure.
That's a great place to start.
The 28th, Sunday the 28th, 12 noon, we'll be at the Norman Skill Farm on Mill Road down in right just outside of Del Mar. And it's 12 to 4. We'll be there.
Well, we thank you both for coming on the show and being with us. I'm Livonia Mallory from WOC 105.3, and my co-host is
Eric Newton. We thank again both Paul Crosby and Noah Corey for joining us. Please support our local blacksmiths.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
So,
For those just tuning in, I'm Eric Newton.
And I'm Livonia Mallory. And that was wonderful. I'm looking forward to blacksmithing. I don't know if you call it blacksmithing, but that's what I'm going to do.
Is that the right term, guys, blacksmithing?
Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And now for our next segment, if you're just tuning in, you listen to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. And if you want to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org.
It's Food Fun Day on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. WOOC correspondent Tatiana Moraney visited the Franklin Alley Social Club in Troy after being open just 2 weeks. Frank and Heidi Sicari talked with Tatiana about what inspired them to open this social club and the challenges that come along with starting a new business.
The drink menu also looks pretty appetizing.
Yeah, we kind of put that together ourselves, and then we had a day where we sat down with all of our bartenders and kind of went through a dry run of all of them, which was probably the most fun that we've had so far. but they're all very inspired by things that you would get, on your honeymoon or on vacation or even on a cruise ship. So a lot of our drinks have garnishes like little umbrellas and flamingos.
A lot of pineapple, a lot of rum, coconut. Definitely tropical and fun and vacation.
Yeah, they're not. And the nice thing is that they're not all really, really sweet either. They don't all have like a ton of sugar in them. They're all coming from fresh squeezed limes and lemons and things like that. So, and then on another note, we actually have a birthday drink. So if you're a member or you have a party in the VIP area, which is downstairs, we have a giant pineapple birthday drink, which comes in a beautiful gold pineapple, which is really fun.
It sounds delicious. Who doesn't love pineapple? So you kind of talked about membership a little bit. Can you elaborate more on what being a member is? What benefits you have being a member and how you become a member?
I guess that's been a confusing thing since we opened, is people thinking you have to be a member to come in, which is not true. Anyone can come in, get a drink, get some food, hang out, play games. Members just get perks, so they get discounts on our merchandise. We have some, shirts and hats and stuff for sale. They get discounts on the shuffleboard and the bocce. They get discounts on renting the space if they wanted to rent for a private party. We have the birthday drink for members, and then we have a members-only area in part of the club there that they can go up and hang out in. But otherwise, it's open for everybody.
Awesome. So this is, I guess, now your second business.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for other people wanting to start a business?
Advice for people starting their business. It's really fun. It's definitely not for everybody. I think there is a lot of pros and cons in owning your own business. For us, since this is a new venture, we've given every second of our lives to Franklin Alley and to this building, really. We don't have kids, so we say that this is our big brick baby. I think for anybody who is thinking about starting a business, I think that it's important to do lots of research and to talk to other business owners, which has been a really great thing for us. We have lots of fellow business owners in Troy and outside of Troy that, we'll sit down and have coffee with and just pick their brains. So to just use anyone who already has a business as a resource is really important. And to know that it is community based, and that you can't think of it as competition. Everybody, we're all in this together and we're all trying to make Troy a better place. But I think if it's something that you want to do, then you shouldn't let anything hold you back from doing it. It can be kind of scary, but I think it's important to keep people in your life that support you and just stay really focused and driven in following your dreams.
That sounds like great advice. Absolutely great advice. So do you guys have any events coming up? I saw that you guys had something yesterday. It was a luau?
Hawaiian night. Yeah.
So talk about what you guys have in store for the future.
So we're going to do a couple of different events, I think, weekly. We're actually right now trying to plan a trivia night, which will be on Wednesdays. Not official yet, but I'm meeting with somebody, I think, tonight, actually. And in the books right now, we have an 80s night that is going to be kicking off Troy Night Out, which is January 26th. It starts at 8 o'clock. And it's actually part of the after party for our Troy adult prom, which this is the third year we've done it. We sold, I'm not even kidding you, 100 tickets in 15 minutes. It is one of the events that Frank and I came up with when we started Talkhouse, but it's just taken on a whole life of its own. We owe it to like the people of Troy to have this thing every year. But you know, the Troy prom is, it's an adult dance party pretty much. But you get to kind of play it out like the prom that you may have never had or want to redo. But people show up in limos and they get really dressed up. This year is 80s themed, so maybe not so much dressed up this year. I don't know.
80s. You can get dressed up nice in 80s stuff. He's got to like perm your airway out.
Yeah, like extra high side pony. But yeah, so downstairs, they'll be happening at the same time. 80s night kicks off at 8 p.m. Trying it out. So that'll be really fun. And we have DJ Truemaster as our DJ. And I know he's really excited and already has like his whole playlist set up. So should be good.
We have a lot of people, we have a lot of people asking us about leagues, so we're going to start that up soon, probably in a month or two. Just shuffleboard and bocce, doing league nights. We don't know exactly when that's going to happen. Maybe Tuesday nights, but we're figuring that out. But that'll be coming.
All this sounds super fun. I also saw a tater tot waffle on your Facebook page. Yeah. You guys are going to do brunch?
Yeah. Yeah, so that starts this Sunday, actually. We are introducing the tater tot waffle. Because tater tots is our thing now. And we have gone through so many tater tots since we opened. We've already had to place like 4 orders for more. but yeah, so I don't think we've invented it, but I haven't seen it around here yet. So pretty excited. So we have We have the one that has bacon and egg on it, one that is kind of Mexican, with like black beans and sour cream and cheese and salsa, and one that is sour cream and chive. And then we're also introducing, so these are only on Sundays from 12 to 2, so they're pretty limited. But we're also introducing a couple of things for like football Sunday as well. So like chili cheese, tater tot bowl and things like that.
All this sounds mega delicious.
If you're on a diet, stay away from Franklin Alley.
So where can people go to learn more about Franklin Alley Social Club?
We are on all of the social media platforms. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all as Franklin Alley Social Club. We also have a website, which is franklinalleysocialclub.com. You can sign up on our mailing list so you can keep up with all our events and when you can get a tater tot waffle. Or you can just stop in. We're open Wednesday through Sunday, and our hours are posted all over the interwebs.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
That was WOOC correspondent Tatiana Moraney interviewing Frank and Heidi Sicari about the Franklin Alley Social Club located at 50 Franklin Alley. Tune in next week at the same time on the same station to hear about part 2. If you want to check out our previous Food Fun Day segments, have a listen to our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast. On Thursday, members of a group of Justice for Damique held a press conference here at the sanctuary to discuss New York State Attorney General's investigation of a police shooting in Troy.
Attorney Mark Mischer, D'Amique McDonald's attorney, spoke with the Justice for D'Amique protests.
From the beginning, we knew that there would never be justice for D'Amique McDonald as long as the Troy Police Department was involved in the investigation of the use of deadly force by Officer Jared Eiler against D'Amique, who was shot while sitting in his parked car on 8th Street, not far from the location of this press conference. We knew this in the way that one knows such a thing, with knowledge based on the historical experiences with the Troy Police Department, as well as from experience of how things generally work in this country when a black person is shot by the police. We can now state unequivocally that we were right. I wish this were not the case. It would be a relief to hear that the Troy Police Department, when confronted with the task of investigating an incident of police use of deadly force, would undertake that responsibility seriously and with the goal of ascertaining the truth. What could be more important than to do this type of investigation properly? Under our law, the police are given extraordinary power, including, under very limited circumstances, the authority to use deadly force. When such force is used, it is essential that there be a full and fair investigation and that there is accountability for the exercise of this extraordinary authority and power. Now we know for certain that neither the pursuit of truth nor public accountability are the goals of the Troy Police Department. Thanks to the Attorney General's investigation into the police killing of Edson Thevenin, which occurred just a little over a year before the use of deadly force against my client, D'Amique McDonald, we know without any doubt that when investigating an incident of police use of deadly force, the Troy Police Department lies, actively covers up for officers, prejudges the outcome of their investigation, obstructs other agencies with expertise from participating in the investigation, grossly mishandles civilian witnesses, including threatening civilian witnesses, fails to arrange for forensic analysis necessary to a proper investigation, and fails to properly evaluate the evidence in its own possession. These aren't my words. This is the Attorney General of the State of New York report after an exhaustive and detailed investigation that they performed. This is shameful. The scope and depth of the cover-up by the Troy police in the Thevenin case is astounding and chilling. To now hear the mayor and other city leaders continue to defend the actions of the police department and to disparage the Attorney General's investigation is frankly nothing less than traumatic for people who live in Troy. Let us be clear. If they did this in regard to the use of deadly force against Mr. Thevenin, then we are justified in concluding that they must have done the same or intend to do the same in regard to their investigation, the use of deadly force against D'Amique McDonald. And let us also be clear that lying, covering up, grossly mishandling witnesses, failing to obtain proper forensic investigations will inevitably lead to future incidents of the improper use of deadly force by Troy police officers. Every single Troy police officer now knows for sure that whatever they do, the department will have their back. And that if pesky little things like contradictory evidence gets in the way, the department will take every imaginable step to undermine or sabotage that evidence. The actions of the Troy Police Department, supported by the city administration, place all of us, all residents and visitors to Troy, at grave risk of harm. D'Amique McDonald deserves justice. The people of Troy deserve justice. Justice starts with a proper investigation. Therefore, we call on the governor to immediately appoint the Attorney General's office to take over the investigation into the use of deadly force against D'Amique McDonald. The Attorney General's office is the only agency that has shown itself willing to dig in and take seriously what it means for a police officer to use deadly force and to go wherever that evidence leads. And we need them to do that for D'Amique. And justice requires accountability. We call on the city to immediately change course, to accept the findings of the Attorney General's office into the killing of Mr. Thevenin, to promptly institute the changes recommended, and to take further steps, such as the establishment of a real civilian review board with independent investigatory power to ensure the safety of the people of Troy and the real accountability of the Troy Police Department. Thank you.
Later in the press conference, Amani Ogubala, also known as Amani O, lamented her sorrow and gave a moving speech.
Peace. I'm so sorry that we are here. I'm glad that we're here together. I look forward to the tomorrow where we don't need to gather for matters like these. May we remain strong and unwavering in our demand for what is right. May we make it so. We do not want any more of our children shot by the Troy Police Department. We demand the implementation of the changes recommended by the Attorney General's report. We demand the creation of a genuine civilian review board with the power to oversee the actions of the Troy Police Department. We do not want to see any more of our children shot by the Troy Police Department. We do not want more police officers to become murderers. It is avoidable. Our children are not collateral damage. We cannot stand idle lest we be participants supporting the murder of the innocent, like the many people who turned the other way knowing that the Holocaust was happening one neighborhood over. It is our responsibility as elders, as those with vocals, as those, the masses, with privilege of freedom and responsibility to work for it for us all. Because a lack of freedom is what we are seeing here in Troy, New York, and across the nation. And it threatens all of our safety. And so folks who are not mobilized because it wasn't their family or somebody didn't look like you, maybe that's understandable because it's scary, but isn't it scary? Isn't the fact that innocent people are wounded and murdered every day with no outcomes other than the pain and distrust and anger and devastation, loved ones lost daily, isn't that scarier and unacceptable? We know the stories of empires that have fallen from greatness. Messiah talked about what is happening. We all see it. Don't we already know the impacts of our fear, of our inaction, the collective dragging of our feet as the tide is washing us towards the future? Non-movement goes against anything in history that has led us to more positive change, to real safety. We have to be courageous now. My message is for my neighbors, for elected officials with the courage to be unpopular amongst those who do not care about the well-being of us all. Never forget that a small group of people is what changes the world every single time. It is what is true of any social justice movement, any civil rights movement. Change doesn't have to be popular to be necessary. We all have varying degrees of power, and we have say in this system. We need to question the collective culture that allows us to turn the other way, to allow ourselves to be distracted and unmoved by this pain. We are so numb, terrified, frozen. Gunshots are loud, and prison is everywhere, and death is real and forever, but avoidable in so many cases involving interactions between innocent and unarmed civilians and armed servants of the masses. There was a time in this country where it made sense for the people in charge to ignore the plights of women simply because of their body parts, where it made sense to degrade black people legally for the shades of our skin. That's still happening. To sacrifice babies for the sins of adults. There's going to come a time where every living person recognizes what is happening today as deplorable and unacceptable. So let that day be today. To Governor Cuomo, to you, we have the great honor of ushering in a new era, a bloodless shift in power. Because time is up for folks who are afraid to give up the legacy of slavery that makes it okay to beat and destroy black families without consequence on a daily basis. Time is up. We have the honor and responsibility to bring about this change. We will not be stopped. Freedom cannot be delayed. It will be brought forth like a wave. We will not be stopped. And we are confident that the governor, the representative of all people of New York, will show up for justice. This is obvious, it is easy, it is necessary, it is essential and expected of administration that has publicly declared a commitment to restoring New York's progress as the progressive capital of the nation. Let the affirmation of Black lives and police accountability be added to the groundbreaking accomplishments like marriage equality, fair minimum wage, paid family leave, all of these different comprehensive policies to end sexual violence, ending the heroin and opiate epidemic, AIDS epidemic by 2020. Obviously, these are beneficial things for all New Yorkers. And we need the same power and gusto and force from the governor for all New Yorkers being denied freedom and justice. How can we be progressive if we continue to ignore the way that the legacy of slave patrols and racism shows up in justice and police accountability? Who is safe? Who is brave enough to stand up for what is right? If not the mayor, let it be the people and those who want to share power with us and exemplify that democracy fall in line with us. We demand the implementation of the changes recommended by the Attorney General's report. We demand a creation of a genuine civilian review board with the power to oversee the actions of Detroit Police Department. For the dignity of our people, for the mental health of our children, the truth. Remember that this call comes to you in the very week that we celebrated the legacy of the radical lover of justice, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In his honor, justice for Damique, Devonin, freedom for all political prisoners, and freedom for us all.
Thank you.
Those speeches were excerpts from Thursday's conference supporting justice for Malik. That was attorney Mark Mishler. Justice for Damique. That was attorney Mark Mishler and Amani O, who gave her speech. That was very moving, wasn't it, Lavonia?
You know, that young lady had such power and passion in her voice, you know, when she said things like, the empire has fallen from greatness. You know, we think about an empire falling. Empire falls when justice no longer rolls across the land. That's when an empire begins to fall. I mean, I was there when she was speaking. She's young, but such a powerful voice for change.
Mm-hmm. And I liked that in addition to being emotionally moving, there's also concrete demands for what needs to be done to improve the situation, referring specifically to the Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's recommendations for the Troy Police Department.
Yes.
Citizens review boards, reformation and training. All of that is definitely going to be necessary.
When Attorney Mishler said things like grossly mishandling of evidence, I mean, when they use legal terms like grossly, I mean, that's again, very powerful, strong language coming from the Attorney General talking about what's happening in Troy.
Right. It does seem like it's easy to brush off when the social justice organizations make these accusations about brutality or anything. But when it does come from higher up, even within the government, I think it really should make people stop and take notice.
Yeah, I'm telling you, when she said things like a bloodless shift of power, I mean, that young lady was really speaking from her heart. And I think, you know, the attorney was right on point when he was talking about when he was reviewing the report. Clearly, there's a need for change. And I'm hopeful that this press conference and other meetings will bring change to our city, to the city that I think all of us love. We're here because we love Troy. Mm-hmm. And we want Troy to be a safe place.
Agreed.
So that concludes our show. Once again, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Lavonia Mallory.
And I'm Eric Newton. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news.
To learn more about this program and how you can support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, feel free to visit us on our website at mediasanctuary.org.
If you'd like information on how you can participate in the production of this program or have suggestions on stories you'd like to hear, email us at info@mediasanctuary.org.
If you're interested in being a part of the radio crew here, We hold weekly meetings Monday right after the show at 7:07 p.m. You can come by the Sanctuary for Independent Media located at 3361 6th Avenue here in Troy.
Until next time, thanks for tuning in.